Hello and welcome, my name's Phil Minot. It's that time of a week again when we all get together
behind the bike shed on Cambridge 105 Radio
to celebrate all things cycling. Coming up in this week's programme, we look at what there is out there to help young cyclists and their families to get out on the open road on their bicycles, to stay safe and of course to ride with confidence. And of course it'd never be a good bicycle ride without a cake stop. So we get to meet a cycling baker who's just launched her new business here in Cambridge and it involves a bicycle. And our guest on a bike this week took up triathlons in her mid-40s and now competes in Ironman races.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Now, despite the dastardly COVID-19, we still managed to get some great guests to come along with the courtesy of Zoom and a mobile telephone. Delighted to say, joining us, we have Emily Cherry of the Bikeability Trust, which is the national charity for bikeability, the UK government cycle education programme. And also joining us in the conversation is keen Cambridge cyclist Sophia, who has already completed some of the bikeability training. Sophia, which levels have you done of bikeability?
I have done level one and level two.
And explain to people what bikeability is from a young person's point of view.
So it teaches you how to ride safely on the road and cycling skills.
Now, Emily, one of the plus points of COVID-19 has been, of course, we've seen lots of families out and about. One of the biggest problems, of course, for young families when they're going out and about, and if you're taking your young family out for the first time on their bicycles, is confidence and safety. At Bikeability, of course, you've been really busy over lockdown and you have got a great scheme for families, which hopefully you can now tell us about.
We certainly have, but how wonderful to hear from Sophia, first of all. I mean, young people are the best advocates for the scheme. You know, having done it, she hit the nail on the head there, cycling with confidence and giving children those safety skills. So that's what we really want to promote at the Trust. So what we've got on the bikeability.org.uk website that families can head to is we've got a whole section for families to look at, which gives you everything from like a parent's handbook to give you tips and tricks about how to cycle safely, to some videos that you can watch to be able to pick up those skills. And then we've also got some fun activities that you can do with the children as well. So a whole suite of resources that will help you to be more confident and take up that opportunity to cycle together as a family.
Now, Sophia, now you come from a cycling family, I understand, but do you, when you're cycling on the road, are you more confident since you've done bikeability than you were before?
Yeah, I used to stick to bike paths, but now I like going on the road sometimes.
And how far do you travel with your, do you go out with your mum and dad?
Yeah, and my little sister.
Emily, what's the best way families can approach cycling as a family for the first time?
So I think that's where we really want to sort of say at the Bikeability Trust that we recognise that right now lots of families want to take up this opportunity but are worried about safety, and that's why we've developed these resources. So you can definitely head to the website and have a look at those. But what we're also doing, because most of bikeability happens in schools. Now, clearly during coronavirus, with so many schools being closed, we've not been able to deliver to as many children, although bikeability is still happening under COVID conditions. So that's why we're now launching a whole new training module for families. And this will be piloted in the next few weeks. We're going to pilot it in Cambridge. That's one of the areas. And it will be for families who are totally new to cycling, who want to get that opportunity. They'll be able to have one-on-one instruction with a qualified instructor who can really help the family get maybe on their bike for the first time, maybe to improve their skills, but definitely people who are kind of new to cycling, because we recognise that now is absolutely the moment to do that and to give family those skills. So a really good development for us. But there are other courses out there as well. We strongly recommend cycle skills training. We strongly recommend, you know, there's lots of good resources out there like ours where you can get that skill and that confidence. But it shouldn't be, you know, a hard thing, something you worry about. The important thing is get your bike, get out there and give it a go. And if you want to give it a go down your local park, somewhere you feel more safely before going out onto the road, great opportunity to practice those skills.
Now, before we ask Emily to give us a few tips for families, Sophia, do you have any tips you would give for someone who's thinking to go cycling for the first time with their mum and dad?
You should just try it. You might really like it, and you should always indicate when you're turning and that kind of thing.
So you've put that very well, I'd say. Now, Emily, if you want to put perhaps a bit more flesh on what Sophia said, if you are a family and you're looking forward to this weekend and it's summer, so who knows, fingers crossed, it could be a lovely weekend to take the family out. And obviously, you can't get yourself on a bikeability course until the following week at least to book it. What the principal guides would you give for a family who want to take young children out cycling with them?
So definitely your first thing is to do your bike check. So we talk about an ABC. So that's your air, your brakes, and your chain. So check those things. So check that your bike is safe before you kind of want to go out. And then the three things that we really want to promote through both the national standards and bikeability is you need to think really carefully about your look, communicate, and your position. So what that means is making sure when you're out on the road that you look behind you, that you can do those checks to make sure that there isn't traffic coming or there are dangers behind you as well as in front of you, that you communicate, so you use signalling to know when you're turning, when you're wanting to go out, to go around a parked car, etc. And then the third thing is that position, so your position on the road. It might be really tempting to think I'm going to cycle so close to the pavement, but actually there's lots of grit and dirt and glass and other things that can exist there. So we recommend for families to think about being much more out in the middle of the road, but still with that ability for a car to be able to overtake you. But if you're looking, you're communicating, and you're checking your position, that will help you give some confidence.
Because the irony of say cycling is you have to sort of be very confident and you have to push yourself out there, don't you, into the traffic, not into a sudden way, but you, like you've just said, you do need to ride a bicycle with confidence so that the car drivers, they realise you're there, don't they?
Yeah, and if you don't feel that confidence, start out on smaller roads, start out on park, get that confidence and build it up over time to be able to do it. But you absolutely, as a cyclist, if you cycle with confidence, if you use those principles around safety, looking, communicating in your position, your confidence will grow. Just make sure the traffic always knows where you are and where you want to go.
Sophia, when you were going through your bikeability courses, did you sneak out, or perhaps not sneak out? Sneak out's the wrong word, really, isn't it? Because it's a good thing to learn. Did you find time to practice on your own between the school lessons?
Well, I when there was bikeability, obviously I had to ride my bike home because I couldn't stay at school. So yeah, I got to try some of the skills out while riding home.
And would you suggest that to any other persons doing bikeability, that actually to practice those skills, between the courses?
Yeah, it really helps.
And when you're out cycling now, do you still use the same things you were taught?
Yeah.
100%?
Most of the time.
Most of, oh, well, that's good. Most of the time's very good, isn't it? So, Emily, we haven't mentioned the great increase in cycling which is happening. I guess the flip side of that is that, as you mentioned, that schools do not have the space as such for the same number of courses. Has bikeability found a way around that?
So that's why we're trialling this new family way of training people, which we'll hopefully be able to roll out by September time. So piloting in a small number of locations, and then from September there'll be more opportunities for family cycling. We do think there's lots of good resources online, so that's why our website is there. And certainly we are always working with government to make sure that there is the right resources and the right funding to be able to promote cycling. This is cycling's golden moment right now. We know that number 10 is absolutely kind of behind. There'll be cycling and walking plans coming out, investment coming from government, and they see it absolutely as part of the COVID recovery for the UK. So now is the time to get on your bike, get the training if you need it, because it will be there, and get the resources online to help you to do it.
Now, you just mentioned a recent round of funding from Downing Street for lots of different cycling projects. Did Bikeability, have you received a top up in funding so you can do more work?
So the grant program is there up until March. That's been fixed till March next year, March 2021. And there'll be a new round of funding and spending on bikeability when we head to a government spending review. So we're working with the FD for that. But absolutely, government sees that cycle skills training is a really key part of the delivery of cycling and walking as an action plan for the UK. So bikeability is at the heart of that. And we're delighted to be able to offer that as much as we can across the country.
Now, Sophia, you are a keen cyclist, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yes. And why do you like cycling?
Because you can explore new places and you get fit and healthy while doing it.
Now, the reason we got in contact with you was because I saw you on regional TV recently and you weren't talking about cycling as such, but you were talking about the environment. Do you have environmental concerns, which also means that's why you cycle?
Yeah, because I don't want to always use the car because it's bad for the environment. And yeah.
And when you're at school, do you do all your school friends, do they feel the same way as you?
Well, I do have some friends which are really into protecting the environment, but some people don't cycle that much.
And what sort of world would you like to grow up? What sort of world would you like to see as you grow up?
Somewhere where there are loads of bike paths, places where you can cycle freely and with less cars.
Oh, well said. Yes, you are ahead. So politicians need to watch out, don't they? Sophia's about. So Emily, what I do wonder about bikeability, is it the case that parents still have to pay for their children to take part?
So bikeability is provided via a grant programme into schools, so parents do not have to pay for bikeability on site and provision. So it's there, it's provided free of charge for parents in the school system. So it's there via a government grant.
Oh, that's good to hear, because I always thought there was like this discussion about why people now had to pay to take part in cycle training at school, but that's not the case. It is all delivered free.
It's all delivered free in school. I mean, clearly there are issues, you know, for families who live in poverty, who may not have a bike themselves, and that is a barrier to taking part in training, and that's something that I would love us to look at the Trust in the future. You know, through partnerships with cycle industry, might be willing to donate bikes so that we can deliver to more families is something that we would love to look at in the future.
I mean, that's a really good point, actually, what you say, people who can't access a bicycle purchase in the first place. We actually recently, a couple of programmes ago, had a residential home on, and they were seeking for sort of bicycle spares and help in repairing their bicycles, because they find a lot of their residents, particularly now with COVID-19, they don't want to use public transport. And of course, for people who are on low incomes, accessing a bicycle is actually an essential in life rather than just a luxury like it is for a lot of us. But for some people, it's their only way to get to work now.
Completely. I mean, it's not just the financial side of it, but I mean, what great hope I have for the next generation, for Sophia and being this, you know, the young people who are being this absolute advocate for climate change as well. So yes, we need to do more to make sure that people who can't access bikes because of financial poverty can access bikes. But we just need to constantly get that message out there as well, that this is not just helping your health, your well-being, but it's also making a huge contribution to environment and climate change. So we're really strongly supportive of this generation being the voice to make sure that happens. So Sophia should be holding us to account, and she is.
Very quickly, Emily, before we go, because you're relatively new to your post with bikeability. I was looking at your previous job where you were involved with, it was about, you know, children and welfare. As a professional looking at young people, do you find cycling is quite an important element for young people when they're growing up?
I think it's not widely accepted and if we look at cycling rates across the UK, you know, there are places like Cambridge where it's really high. There are places like Doncaster where you only get 14% of people eligible to take up bikeability take it up. So that just shows you the huge difference that there is across the country. I think there's lots more that we can do to really get that message out there to young people that cycling is great for your health, for well-being, great for climate change, and can give you confidence and independence. You know, I listening to Sophia talk there, you know, I'm a parent myself of an 11-year-old, and you do worry as a parent when they're going off cycling on their own. Are they safe? Are they going to get there okay? But that's why that cycle skill training is so important, to give them the confidence, to give them that independence, and to give you as a parent the confidence that they know what they're doing.
Sophia, thank you very much. And thank you very much as well to Emily there from Bikeability. You can find a lot more detail on my Bikeability website. I had a look there earlier, and there is some really great stuff for families, and it's really well laid out. So thank you very much, both of you, and safe cycling.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And welcome back to Behind the Bike Shed here on Cambridge 105 Radio. It's a time in the programme where Tony gets to say,
it's time to meet today's guest on a bike.
And it's a guest I've been looking forward to chatting to now for a month or so, and I finally managed to get hold of her. And it's Anna Street, who is a triathlon and an Ironman competitor. And she's generally all round inspirational, I think, for perhaps the not so young person who wants to take up sport. She's sitting and she's telling me, we're chatting via Zoom, she claims she's 56. But sports obviously treated you well, hasn't it, Anna? You got into cycling via running, didn't you?
I did, and swimming. I spent most of my time when I was younger running, and then my youngest son learned to swim, and I had swimming lessons with him. And it was actually the swimming coach who said to me, why don't you do a triathlon? And I said, because I don't have a bike.
And it's because of that you obviously went out and you got yourself a bicycle. And here we are, all this time later, and you have ridden Land's End to John O'Groats. You've taken part in 6 Ironman races. A bit ironic they still call them Ironman, isn't it, really? And the bike leg is 112 miles in Ironman, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's quite difficult when you've got to run 26 miles afterwards. You've got to remember not to go too hard on the bike.
So the first long bike you done, where was it and why?
I did the London Revolution, which is 185 miles, and it's over 2 days, and you actually camp on Windsor Racecourse. The second day you go up Box Hill, and I did it as part of my prep towards my first Ironman.
And I have to say, because you mentioned earlier, you know, you are a mum, so you're obviously a busy person. What drives you to take part in sport?
Well, now my children are a bit older, so I have a bit more time for myself. And I'd actually thought that while the children were growing up and I didn't have so much time to do sport, I thought I'd actually got a bit fat and it would be a way for me to help me lose some weight.
And so you sort of went from wanting to lose a few pounds, I guess, to, I mean, you are, I hope you don't mind me saying this, you sort of, your CV reads as if you're quite addictive.
Yes, I am. And I do sort of 28 hours of exercise a week when it's leading up to Ironman.
And what does the training involve for Ironman?
I do probably 2 long bike rides a week, so 6-hour rides, and then a couple of sessions on my Watt bike. I had an accident in an Ironman race in Venice, and my cycling then became quite weak because I broke my pelvis. So then I actually employed a cycling coach as opposed to a triathlon coach, and the cycling was much harder with her.
Now, the other thing you forgot to mention about the accident you had while you were taking part in your Ironman race in Venice was the fact that you had an accident on your bicycle and you broke your pelvis.
Yes, and then you got places.
And then, now most of us, if it was me, hand up, first aid, I'm away. The first thing you wanted to do was get back on a bicycle. I mean, literally during the race.
Well, adrenaline's a wonderful thing. I had 44 miles to go, and at that point, I was actually winning my age group. And then the paramedic had me sitting on the side of the road and I could just see everybody going by. So you just itch to get back on.
But, I mean, you literally did get back on a bike, didn't we? We have to stress, you finished that event.
Yeah.
And did you win your age group?
No, I was 45 minutes with the paramedic and then he had to get a marshal to agree to let me to carry on. Then the biking got slower and slower due to the brake, obviously. And then when I got to the end, I did 44 miles with my broken pelvis, but then I couldn't get off the bike at the end.
Because I find it quite interesting when you have elite sports people, and I put you in that category, obviously. Most of us, if we get an injury while we're doing a sport like that, we sort of, our brain tells us, right, that's it. It doesn't matter how competitive you feel. What made you want to carry on?
I think it's the amount of time that you spend training. You know, you'll spend sort of 6 months training for an Ironman, and 3 months of it will be really hard training. Also, it's the cost that you've invested as well.
And is that, do you think there's like a life lesson in that for people? Knowing the cost, but the fact that, you know, you did take the hard option there, because I'm guessing it must have been quite painful.
Yes, it was quite painful. And it's just the never give up.
And then you said you then got some coaching to get over that, to help you get over it. But you went to an unusual sort of coach, didn't you? You weren't coached back in the way one would first think you would be coached back from an injury.
No, I, 13 weeks after I broke my pelvis, I actually took part in a 24-hour run. And I then decided to get an actual cycle coach, because the cycling was the weakest part. The cycle coach I had, she had no experience of running, and she really sort of hit me hard with the cycling, sort of 10, 11 hours of cycling a week. She also got me to get a power meter. So everything with her is power, watts, heart rate.
So it is interesting, isn't it? Because for a lot of people of our, I put myself in your generation as well, the idea of sort of looking to technology to start training, when we've sort of done it, I would imagine you've done it the traditional way up until then. Was it, did you have to change your mindset so you could start using a power meter, which we have to explain to non-cyclists and non-sport people? A power meter basically is the way it works out how much power your body is producing, rather than usually you'd say, oh, I cycle at 20 miles an hour or 25 miles an hour, I suspect in your case, or higher. But it actually just tells people how much power you're putting out. And for me, as someone who was brought up in the traditional, just get out on your bike and cycle it, I think it's quite a hard thing to get your head around new training techniques.
Yes, it was. And also, I find it's definitely harder as well, concentrating on watts all the time. But it does make you put in the extra effort. And I've also got a watt bike now as well. So everything's about the watts.
I noticed, because you had a female coach, was there a reason why you went for a female coach?
No, generally when I've done triathlon, I've gone for male coaches, but the lady I use is called Ruth Eels, and she had really good results herself and was a time trialist, and she just came highly recommended, so I thought I'll give it a whirl.
So you've also done the Land's End to John O'Groats, which is sort of, for a lot of people, it's the holy grail of cycling for them. It's the sort of thing most people have got on their bucket list and may want to tick one off. You've done yours in 9 days, and you've done the Camping Salt one, and you were raising money for Threshold Sports, which was good to raise money for Paralympians. But you got to cycle, didn't you, alongside some pretty famous people on that one?
Yes, we did. Because it was for Paralympians, each day a different sports celebrity, if you like, joined us. Threshold Sports, I think, partly belongs to James Cracknell, so he came with us for several days. Sarah Story came out with us one day. Rebecca Romero came out with us one day. We had some guys, we cycled through Bath, and some of the guys from the Bath rugby team came out with us. So we had good support from all the celebrities as well.
And is there, changing course slightly, is there any advice you would give for people who, I mean, as we know, lots of people are now taking up cycling, and not just cycling, other sports. So they get to a certain age now, and it's for sort of golf clubs are now reporting a drop in memberships because people want to do more active sports. Are there any tips, particularly for females who are perhaps at that age in their life where children go off to university and they want to take up a sport, but they want to take up a sport properly like you have, rather than just keep fit, they want to be competitive? Is there any sort of guidelines or tips you could give people?
Well, joining a club might be quite a good one. I'm part of the West Suffolk Wheelers. You've got other like-minded people like yourself, and they'll encourage you. And we all started the same way. So get a friend or join a club, I think, is one of them.
Well, yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it? Clubs are quite a good way to do it. How disciplined do you have to be, though, on your day-to-day living to ensure you have enough time to go cycling?
Well, I have the luxury of not going to work anymore, so...
But to be fair, a lot of us have that at the moment.
I've had that for a few years now, about 7 years. But, yeah...
You're basically saying find a rich partner? No.
I could do that.
Yeah. Or work hard. Yeah, work hard when you're younger. Sorry, you were saying.
But, I've missed the question now.
So the question was, how do you find the time in your day, Anna, to fit in all your training requirements? Because I'm suspecting you have to be very disciplined.
Well, I'm quite selfish, really. And if I'm training for a competition, basically the training comes first.
Well, that just seems right to me. Yeah, why not? So, I tell you what we're going to do. In a moment, we're going to be asking you to play...
Let's play Spin That Wheel.
But before then, we're going to give you a short break.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And my guest on a bicycle this evening is Anna Street, who is a triathlon, an Ironman cyclist, and basically an all-round hard egg. And she looks really good on it as well, I have to say, which is good. And you're a very good diplomat and an advert for cycling. Because when I was researching you, Anna, you're quite regular, aren't you? You do speak at various events for people.
Yes, I do. And I do. I did the Marathon du Sable, which is actually a run. And a lot of people, I have to go and speak quite a lot about that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, your CV of a different races, it would take the whole slot, to be honest, to tell people what you've taken part in. And I suppose the key is it comes across to me that you do really enjoy doing what you do.
Yes, I do. Yeah, it's particularly like long distance stuff, bit of endurance.
And is that like, can you lose yourself when you're doing in your brain, or are you focusing on the competition when you do it?
Well, when I'm actually in a competition, obviously I'm focusing on the competition. Sometimes I find myself dawdling on a bike and then somebody passes you that you think really shouldn't be able to pass you and makes you get a shift on.
Does it? Yeah. Well, I have to say, it's not an experience I get, unfortunately, on a bicycle a lot. So there's people like you passing me. Okay, now, Anna, now we are going to...
Let's play Spin That Wheel.
So it's our 3 minutes of cycling-related daily habits. Questions for you, and I shall ask you the questions. Once we hear the starter's bleep, I shall ask you the first question, and please do ask the first thing, answer the first thing which comes into your brain. So if you are ready, are you ready, Anna?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So let's go. Let's play
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Spin That Wheel.
Anna Street, what's your earliest memory of cycling?
When I went to the bike shop to get a bike, aged 46, and I hadn't been on one since I was a child, and they lent me a very expensive Giant, and they had to stand outside the shop and watch me go wobbling off down the road.
And did it come back quickly, or was it a matter of days or weeks?
Well, no, I came back reasonably quickly, but I didn't know how the gears worked or anything else. I just went wobbling off down the road, trying to put my feet in the cages in the pedals.
Yeah, it's always the first step, isn't it? Or the first turn of a pedal, the hardest one, isn't it? Now, what type of cycling do you enjoy most now?
The flat TT type of cycling I like best.
Time trial.
Yeah,
time trial and cycling, when you're racing against the clock. And how often do you cycle, Anna?
I cycle probably 5 days a week.
And how far do you go when you go out each day?
It ranges from a 2-hour ride to a 6-hour ride.
What sort of bicycle or bike do you currently pedal? And if you own more than one, which one's your favourite?
My favourite is my Cannondale Slice.
Okay, now I'm not sure if you use any of these, but would you use a basket, saddlebag, pannier, or rucksack?
No.
Okay, everything goes into your back pocket.
Yes, it does.
You're streamlined, aren't you, for sure? What would be the perfect dream cycle ride for you? Whereabouts in the world would it be, and with whom?
Well, with somebody of roughly the same speed. You don't want somebody you've got to keep up with. Probably I would like to do some of the Tour de France, but I've not actually done any of that.
What is the longest distance you have ever cycled? Was it the 185 miles?
Yes, that was over 2 days, but I did do 135 miles once in 1 day.
Oh, well, that's far. Do you prefer cycling solo or in the company of other cyclists?
Solo.
Do you have a cycling hero?
Chris Froome.
That's a good choice. Which one improvement do you think would encourage more people to enjoy cycling?
Better road surfaces.
Okay. And do you prefer cycling in town or out of town?
Out of town.
On bypasses or on single, on narrow roads?
Not narrow roads.
Yeah, you prefer that out on your own? Do you know, yeah. You've done a first, because you are the first person to answer all these questions before we run out of time. So I'm now going to ask you a question. When's your next cycle trip?
Well, I don't know. Everything's been cancelled this year.
Of course. So what happens when it cancels? Are you now planning ahead for following year?
Yeah, well, some things have just been moved to next year. I'm hopefully going to do an Ironman in Cozumel, Mexico in November, actually, on my birthday. But I'm just waiting to hear if that's going to go ahead.
Behind the Bike Shed with Phil Minot on Cambridge 105 Radio.
So thanks again there to Anna Street. Such an interesting person to talk to. Certainly the other bit we didn't mention is the fact that cycling has taken all around the world as well. And that's what endurance cycling can do for you. Something else endurance cycling can do for you, it can actually help you spend 24 hours, yep, that's it, 24 hours cycling up and down the Cambridge guided busway. Adam Cundick, why would you earth want to cycle 24 hours up and down on a guided busway?
We set a challenge of cycling around the world in 31 days, or even walking, or running, or even kayaking. And I wanted to do something really big for the last weekend of the 31 days. So I set up a 24-hour bike ride up and down the busway.
Okay.
Safe, really.
So you were doing this for Click Sergeant, weren't you, which is children with cancer. But 24 hours and on the guided busway, how many journeys did you do?
11 in the end.
And were you doing that on your own?
With my daughter, who's 18, Chloe, and young guy from Cambridge called Don Hindman. And we were joined on various laps by quite a number of people, including an 18-year-old who's only just been cycling 12 weeks, who clocked up a nice 100 miles for us.
And that was an Alex Cox, wasn't it? And
that was Alex Cox.
So how far did you cycle, Adam?
217 miles. I couldn't complete it all. It was I was just too tired in the end.
To be honest, you completed it more than once, so I'd say you completed it, my friend.
Well, and it's a boring place.
And Chloe, how far did Chloe cycle?
Chloe cycled 203, but injury got her in the end.
Okay, and Don Hindman, he was the furthest, wasn't he?
Yeah, 237.
Well, look, my friend, we're going to take our caps off to you because it was an awful day when you done it, wasn't it? The wind was brutal and presumably it was raining as well. Did you find the night bits, I'd imagine sort of between midnight and early morning, usually in 24-hour races, that really is the psychological bit. It makes or breaks people.
We had a lot of good company with us during the night. a guy called Simon who runs Long Leg Tours and joined us. And we just kept motivating each other, talking to each other, and just keep feeding. And once that sun started rising, it was what a pleasure to see. It started warming up. We started drying out because of the rain. And it was that was great, absolutely great.
Well done, Adam. And if you want to support Adam, it's justgiving.com/VCMF25000. Look, my friend, we're going to let you get back to bed and have sweet dreams. And well done.
Thank you very much, Phil.
Take care. Now, last week we spoke to a florist, and that was all about flower power. But this week we're going to be talking about a different sort of flower power. And it's a new business here in Cambridge called Bicycle Bakes. Welcome, Gwyneth Horscroft. You are the master chef behind this business. Now, I'm guessing, I was lucky enough to try some of your product last week, and I have to say that was fantastic. We'll talk about that in a minute. But how long have you been a chef? I'm presuming quite a long time.
Is baked for a really long time, but I've never really sold my baked goods to anyone. It's just been a hobby that I've done in my spare time.
Well, it's a great hobby, and it's a hobby where you have to share it for sure. Now, I have to ask you then, when did you set your business up?
Officially, I only launched last week, actually. I'm regularly a corporate travel agent. But obviously, due to COVID, the industry in travel is not really going at the moment. So I had to set up a side business so that when travel gets back up and running, I'm still available for my regular clients. But I can have a bit of a side business to help with finances in the meantime.
I can't believe it. Someone told me you've only just started cycling. Is that true?
Well, like I've had a bike and I've commuted. Like I've never owned a car, so I've always relied on walking or cycling. But up to this point, I was more of a runner or a rower. And it was only in the past, let's say, 4 months that I've really taken on cycling more seriously.
Now, I have to say, I did mention that last week I was lucky enough to sample some of your wares, and I really appreciate that. And I have to say, you don't have to do that to become on to become part of Behind the Bike Shed. But both myself and Jane, who helps put the program together, we appreciated it a lot. Now, the macaroons, I'm going to chat about those, because I have been lucky enough to have macaroons in Paris, in the Champs-Élysées, when I was working there. It's supposed to be the best in the world. Well, I've got news for them, Mr. French person, monsieur. The best macaroons now you can get delivered on a bicycle in Cambridge. They were just gorgeous.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really nice.
Yeah, how do you get your recipes?
A lot of them are there online. You kind of have to look. Macaroons are very finickety, so it's a lot of finding a recipe that works for you, and then you don't change much. But the flavors and things like that, I just kind of look for inspiration on Pinterest or cocktails or things like that, and kind of make up my own as I go.
So you also do, well, it's other stuff, isn't it? I mean, obviously can't turn this into an advert for you, but there's also available is afternoon tea for two.
Yeah.
And also chocolate chip cookies. And I have to say, once again, the cookies were very nice. Thank you. And actually, I would say as a cyclist, the cookies are a sort of thing, which I know we're meant to have protein bars and all that sort of food. But for me, the cookies were something which would go in my back pocket on a cycle ride. I mean, they're just superb. You are a sports person because you said you do run and row. When you're doing your when you're working out the recipes, is healthy food part of it, or is it, I want a nice sugary taste here?
It kind of depends on what it is. So I definitely do things for flapjacks and things like that that are more that I would take on a cycle. I'll look at having maybe no refined sugars or using honey instead of sugar and things that are better for you and break down better. And so it kind of depends. Things like chocolate chip cookies, I didn't really look at the health element in it too much.
No, I mean, it's not actually two words you hear together, is it?
Cookies
and health for it. And a little bit of something naughty goes a long way, doesn't it? Now, the bicycle part of the business.
Yeah.
How does the business plan work then? if somebody, you know, if from your point of view and the bicycle?
So logistically, I don't have a car. So if I was going to do delivery, kind of bicycle seemed the only way to go. So things like if it's central Cambridge or Milton or Trumpington, Great Shelford, I'm willing to deliver a couple times a week and I'll just do the deliveries all in one go on a certain day. If you live farther away or if you're looking to do full-size cakes and things that don't transport so well on a bicycle, then it would be pickup available in Chesterton.
Now, you've just made me feel quite hungry. So what we're going to do, we're going to stop this little segment just for a moment, just so we can sort of dream about cookies and stuff like that. And while we're having a little munch away here, I'm going to play you a song. And I thought this song was quite appropriate. I don't know if it's a flavour you thought of yet, but I suspect Harry Styles would like it. It's Watermelon Sugar.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And my guest in the final part of the programme is the bicycle baker, Gwenith. Gwenith, you know, you've had a little while to think there. Any recipe you can do with watermelon sugar?
Absolutely. Happy to give it a go. Maybe a cocktail-flavoured watermelon macaron.
Oh, that's good. Maybe we can persuade you to call it the bike shed.
I can, absolutely.
We're onto something here, aren't we? Very creative, aren't we? Now, your business... the reason, to be honest, it was flagged up to me was by a fellow bike shedder who's actually used it. And I get the impression you're quite busy now.
Yeah, it's really taken off right from the get-go. So I think with macarons, it's something slightly different that you don't always get in Cambridge. So I think it's been quite popular in that sense, yeah.
You say macaron, I say macaroon.
Well, actually, a macaroon would be a coconut meringue based. A macaron is the French one.
Okay, we don't have to call the whole thing off then. So, do you think lockdown has made sort of, you know, people want to treat themselves a little bit more because we can't do the bigger things in life?
Yeah, I think so. I think you look for something a little bit more special that you wouldn't necessarily have if you were going out and having as many dinners out or going to the pub and things like that. You look for something special that you can have in home and make the weekend a little bit different.
So, Gwenith, before you go, before we finish, because the finish line is fast approaching here on Behind the Bike Shed, how can people get hold of you? Or just to look at pictures of cookies, I guess.
I'm on Facebook and Instagram right now at Bicycle Bakes, and the website should probably be up in the next week at bicyclebakes.com. But Instagram and Facebook are the best ways right now.
We have running out of time here. Thank you to my guests today. Special thank you to Emily Cherry and Sophia. Thank you to our bicycle bakes, Gwenith Horsecroft, and our guest on the bike this week, Anna Street. And of course, thank you to Adam Kundick there, the 24-hour. Can you imagine that? Up and down a guided busway on your bicycle, 24 hours, all for a good cause, of course. Now, next week, we have a very special treat for you all here on Behind the Bike Shed. I will be joined by the voice of cycling, the one and only Phil Liggett. Yeah, Phil Liggett, his mellow tones have guided us cycling fans through 47, yeah, that's right, 47 tours to France, and he still spends, after almost six decades in the business, he still spends most of the year, in a normal year anyway, following the road pro circuit around the world. He's also agreed to play Spin That Wheel. And if you're new to cycling, I suggest you listen to him because he really is the master of all, which comes to cycling. That's it. You've been listening to Behind the Bike Shed. It's a Barking Hound production for Cambridge 105 Radio. The voice of Spin That Wheel was Tony Barnfield. I'm Phil Minot. And until next time, stay cycling.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bike Shed. Just to let you know, you can sponsor this or any other programme on Cambridge 105 Radio. Email sales@cambridge105.co.uk.
Behind the Bike Shed on Cambridge 105 Radio.